So how do you guys know each other?
Judy Gleason? Well, we both worked for that lunatic.
Oh.
Both free from the lunatic.
That's the same lunatic? That lives on the moon, right? This is our new mascot for the triangles. We can have a picture on the that section. We can have a picture of the fiddler on the roof.
Oh,
this is God,
God
or Magog.
This is the guy who's just right on the tip of the roof, about ready to fall off.
He's balancing.
Balancing.
The extensive, that's the constrictive side of the triangle.
Yeah, and I had a wonderful shiur up at the cabin. It's just great up there, by the way. The aspens are changing this week. And fortunately, we've gotten to see the shades of colors. Each day it changes, because this is right on the cusp of when the leaves start changing. Mm-hmm. Ever since I was in New England for the fall, we got to take whatever fall we get, right? Please don't put it on that.
Oh. Why?
Put it on the English book. That's a.
Oh, it's
a
the
name of God.
I thought it was something else.
You can put it on
what
the book. Yeah. I just got these Samach Zorin for
Rosh Hashanah
and Yom Kippur too. I got three copies each plus these books, which were kind of coordinate page numbers and things like that. How was your Shabbos? Where'd you go in the end?
I went to Rabbi Sarabransky's.
Okay.
And on Friday evening, I went to the Bulows.
Oh.
Yeah.
How was that?
Sat next to Josh. It's very nice.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very nice indeed.
What do you do on Shabbos normally on Friday nights? Friday nights? You probably know here, I'm out in Westminster, I have a breakfast place.
You live out there in
Westminster? No, I live here, but I go and stay there with food. It's my Shabbos.
Maybe we'll have a new neighbor here soon.
Yeah.
Don't.
Are you trying to move in the neighborhood?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
We'll have a whole Barry lives down the block now. He moved into Carolyn's house.
Oh, yeah. We saw him move in.
Yeah. And then we have...
Who is that?
Barry...
Marish.
Uh-huh. Oh, I wonder where he disappeared to.
Then when the Mashiach comes, Barry and Simeon move.
When the Mashiach comes,
you guys will move.
Then we'll move, right, exactly.
So you promised me when I move, you only say that goes to the neighborhood.
No, you know. You know why they killed Malcolm X? Did you hear that?
No.
You know why they killed Malcolm X?
Same reason why
he sold his house to a guy from Poland, you know.
You know, I watched Schindler's List the other night.
Oh yeah,
we watched it on
for fun, huh?
Yeah, sort of. And one thing that impressed me was at the end of the film. They said there are now less than 4,000 Jews left in Poland, and
that's
there
true.
Are.
Not true.
No, well, the film was made some years ago.
Yeah.
And there are over 6,000 people from Schindler's group alive.
Yeah.
I thought 4,000 versus 6,000, that's quite
a comparison, right?
Yeah.
That's right. And
how many Jews do you think there are in Poland?
Well, a lot of them have surfaced, uh-huh. You know. A lot of them have surfaced. A lot of people are still finding out they're Jewish. Their parents... get ready to die, they said, oh, you were placed on the doorstep as a baby. A lot of Jewish babies were just put on the doorstep. And some people find out only when their parents die. Right before they die, they tell them. So there's still people finding out.
I wonder what the usual response to that is.
Shock and total shock.
Yeah.
Total shock. It's like Madeleine Albright and what?
What's it? Madeleine Albright.
Madeleine Albright, I run into people all the time that were never told.
I wonder what happens to people like Albright, who finds out it hits the news, and then what happens a year or two later? What does she do with it?
I have a very good book about a young woman who was a lawyer. She was about 22, and just finished law school, and she started putting two and two together. And then she did the investigations and found out that she was indeed Jewish, and her parents had been in the Holocaust, and they just were ashamed to tell her. They were afraid to tell her. And it's called After a Long Silence. It's an excellent book, and it tracks all that whole process of how she came. But I have several students in that same situation. And this one woman, Bambi, who got our emails, or still gets our emails, she said, growing up, as she remembers it, was like having a muzzle and a gag across her mouth. Just the way, it's like the secret of incest or something like that. And then in my most close case, I think I told you about, where I have this very close friend from college, who's a Hungarian Jew from Budapest, and they moved to Amsterdam. They're law professors and academicians and very smart people. But he brought his son to me, to Denver, for me to tell him, because he was so afraid to tell him that he was Jewish. He had me tell him.
How's the son react?
Just incredulous, you know.
Was he happy about it or like mad about it?
He was happy, but he was also very confused.
Why would they be afraid? I don't get the. I'm not connecting.
Because when you have a persecuted minority, you could interview Joel a little bit. We're talking about various ways fear works. You know a lot about this. That if you have a persecuted minority, and your identity will cause you to die, and then you hide that identity, it's a life or death matter. It's just like all the examples of survivors I work with, this whole family of where all the women, the grandmother, the daughter, and the granddaughter all have to get their hair done every 3 days because their looks were how they survived the Holocaust. So here the secrecy is how they survived the Holocaust. They hid out. And they, after the war, they were terrified to reveal that identity because it could get you killed. That's why a lot of American Jews left their Jewish identity behind, because they didn't want to, they associated it with being killed.
I think my confusion is that in the original circumstances, there was a danger of being killed. But afterwards, that danger disappeared.
Post-traumatic stress.
We have a friend, Dave Bornstein, Bert Bornstein. He graduated an MBA from Holy Cross. And his father told
him. His dad sent him there.
His dad said, the greatest graduation gift I can give you is to tell you to change your name.
All right.
Really?
His grandparents were in the Holocaust. And,
yeah. His cousins. And so
no, it's a stigma, and you want to get rid of it, you know. Right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that why Sammy Davis dated May Britt?
Yeah. He did.
He says, in your face.
He's
an interesting guy.
Yeah,
did you ever read that about his life? He's a really interesting guy. I mean, he was both very forward about his identity and also... Yeah. So I mean, my first awarenesses of this was discussing with black people. Jews never discuss this stuff. They're afraid to. You didn't grow up discussing Jewish identity and self-hatred. How easy is it for Jews to talk about self-hatred?
My family, they were too busy hating one another.
Yeah, but...
there was no time for the world.
There's a big world out there.
They thought they were hating each other, but it was really self-hatred, right?
Well, Angie, in Costa Rica, there's a whole group of Sephardim there that came from... Actually came from Spain.
Syria, Spain.
in Morocco. Where do you from Morocco, Spain?
Most from Spain.
It's an interesting Jewish community there, I know.
They believe that about 80% of Costa Rica are descendants from the tribe of Benjamin.
Yeah.
The ravenous wolf.
Yeah. They ran away after the Pelagians from Gibraltar.
Yeah, ran away. No wonder they ran away.
But they're afraid of their identity.
These people... the Muranos had to hide their identity for 400, you know, since 1492, 600 years.
Tell them about, they found, like, the first flag of Costa Rica was a white flag with a red star David in the middle.
Red star David on it.
Yeah.
The
same as Southern Colorado. You don't have to go to Costa Rica. It was almost all Jews in Southern Colorado because that was the furthest edge of the empire, the Inquisition. Was slowest to get there, and so you go down to Trinidad, find Jewish graves, and I see meet people all the time. The guy who bought the cabin, the real estate broker, is John Sanchez. I said, Sanchez, that's a Jewish name. He started looking into it. He found out his whole family were Jews, and he was shocked. Again, just these things happen, you know. One of my favorite Elie Wiesel stories is that he was took a taxi cab and Zaragoza, Spain. The guy said, the cab driver said, come home with me. I have something I want you to read for me. And so, not usually the cab driver is take you home, but he went home with this guy. And he pulls out a parchment. He says, I, Moshe, son of Abraham, I'm declaring to my family that I had to convert under duress and that they should know that they're Jews for all the generations, you know. And this cab driver, in Hebrew, this cab driver couldn't believe what he found, you know, just shocked, you know. So we seldom think anything of it. 10 years later, he's at the opening of the Knesset building. I don't know what year that was. The new one, the new Knesset building they're in now. And he feels a guy tapping him on the shoulder. He looks around, he doesn't recognize anybody. He says, the guy says, don't you remember me? I'm that cab driver. He came to Yerushalayim, came back to be a Jew. Unbelievable. We just had a wedding for two conversos. They converted back. They studied and they converted and they just got married. Two people, you know, from separate families and independently. They came back and converted and... in Rabbi Lovett's class and just got married. So, go figure. Some people, there's a whole town in Portugal that converted back. After 500-600 years of going to church every Sunday. Can you imagine?
No. No, I can't imagine.
They converted back en masse to Orthodox Judaism. En masse. The whole town.
I can't imagine. We talked last week about this tribe in Uganda that they all converted.
Yeah, well, that's another thing with Joel too. The influence of the Judaism into Africa there was.
Did you have it there in Ghana?
Seems like it.
Yeah.
What was there?
I know northern India.
We found 100 different mitzvahs that his tribe, it's identical stuff, right? Bris, Tumah Tahara, Nida, sitting on the floor, all 100 different things, right, Joel?
Yeah.
All without awareness that's where it was coming from?
No, that's what we're born with. You also said that's what our forefathers taught us to do.
Yeah. Belief in one God. It's a very... I did a paper on Jewish influence in West Africa. So Israel sent this anthropologist to study it, and he says, I was there for 6 months and I saw nothing Jewish. Finally, I got the Jewish influence. There was somebody who was sick, and the witch doctor was doing a dance, and an old lady comes up and taps him on the shoulder and says, my son, the doctor.
My son, the doctor.
These conversations take a turn sometimes.
Good job. There he is.
Good job.
We just are finishing chapter one, and really we're going to have a Lahaim.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. What did you bring here? What do you got?
This is from Amiad in northern Israel.
Oh, very nice. Well, you got those small things.
It's a Rosh Pina.
Oh yeah, we got to finish the chapter.
And then we're going to do a review, which we're ready for.
That's good, because we said you have to study the cab drivers to know why they review. Why? Because they have a standard 10 miles, they charge one zuz, and then if they go 11 miles, they charge two zuz. They double the fee, right? It'd be like a psychiatrist. You go 50 minutes, $300, and 55 minutes, $600, right?
51.
Yeah, because so what do you learn from them about religion? That was Hillel's genius. You know, we're talking about a great new triangle that I discovered, which was. I'm running out of room here.
You need me to put more?
Yeah, we need more triangles. But basically, the on the left side is called cognitive man. You'll like this, Baruch. The left side is called cognitive man. This is from Soloveitchik. And the right side is homo religiosi, the mystic. And in the middle, the synthesis of cognitive man and the mystic is the halachic man. Because the Torah says every mitzvah has to marry the two, the concrete world, and the mystical world, and that mysticism, cut off from the mitzvahs, it just floats off into the ozone, and it becomes destructive, and that's the idea of Moshe and Noah, that they're not, that if you don't have that integration, it just becomes what we call promised land thinking. Where the spirituality causes a terrible distortion, and Noach wakes up and says paradise turns into hell, and the rapture turns into some kind of nice people end up killing and torturing others just because they don't fit their idea of paradise. And that's a terrible, and plus all the four that go into the pardes, that we know that all the distortions that occur if your spirituality outruns your concrete cognitive thing. So Moshe goes to Israel, the Zionists tried to suppress the Torah. Right? Why? Because Moshe, the main hero isn't going to Israel. So Zionism doesn't like the Torah too well. The whole book is based on Moshe turning his back on the land of Israel, mm-hmm. And that's cognitively dissonant. But he says, unless I go to this place of integration, it's not going to work. And so that's really like I became aware that this is one of the key triangles.
But that's